Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's week 97 on the podcast. We're hurtling towards that centennial show fairly rapidly. Welcome along. So much exciting racing in the last 7 days with La Samin and Strada Bianchi, start of Paris-Nice. So much to enjoy. But of course, this morning the only place we can start is the Department for Media, Culture and Sports findings. They've presented their findings back on the Team Sky alleged doping, and it's not pretty reading at all. Dan Rowan of the BBC, who's been quite anti-Team Sky, I think, since Dave Brailsford may have frozen him out of his interview select panel. Rowan has gone in quite hard on them. There's a lot of assumptions in his article, to be fair. He's joined a lot of dots up. He's put a lot of two and twos together to get to the numbers that he's got to. But having said that, it's pretty telling. We've got an unnamed but apparently credible and reliable Sky source who's weighed in saying that, and to be fair, I think deep down, most of us in and around the sport would have had a reasonable idea that Sky use the medicines that were available to them to the max without crossing the line. So I think that's the important thing to start with, is to say that the findings from the report, the analysis of the report, does go back in to say that there is only really signs of ethical wrongdoing as opposed to actual drug taking offences. So to paraphrase, what they are saying is that Team Sky have utilised TUEs, they've utilised legal drugs, but they've pushed them right up to the limit of what, you know, is acceptable and what is not acceptable in terms of the rules to get benefits. And when, you know, the claims that Bradley Wiggins has had, you know, the contents of a nebulizer flown out to him, and sets of the team were working separately from other parts in the run-up to the 2012 tour to get muscle and body fat and everything in tune and toned correctly by using some legal out of competition, or drugs that are legal out of competition but are legal in competition. So that's the big difference, that the drugs that are allegedly being or have been administered were illegal if they're taken in competition, they're legal out of competition, and obviously, you know, hidden away on in a hotel in Mallorca or somewhere like that, where the riders, you know, are away from prying eyes and training hard at altitude. That is where, you know, I think, reading between the lines, the transgressions are pointed to. The one thing that could still rumble on is, of course, the Jiffy bag. If the Jiffy bag did include triamcinolone, then that is a difficult one, because technically Bradley Wiggins is alleged to have taken it after the conclusion of that Dauphiné, which he won. If he took it at midnight and 1 second the morning after the Dauphiné finished, he's in the clear because he's out of competition. If he took it at like 11:59 p.m. the same day that the race finished, then he could be in trouble, and we could see the Olympics, the Tour de France, we could see all of those things potentially retrospectively stripped from him. So this one's going to rumble and rumble, I think. It's a mortal blow for the Team Sky supporters. You know, when the team started, I was one of those people that bought in. I've never, until the weekend, been tempted to call them UK Postal. That was in a tongue-in-cheek tweet to a friend. It just feels like now it's unravelling, and it's unravelling fairly quickly. I think that there will be, unfortunately, a bit of an overshadowing to Paris-Nice and to Renault over this. Don't forget as well that the content of this report doesn't cover anything to do with Chris Froome and his salbutamol positive or high reading, rather, at the Vuelta. So it is a pretty bad day for Team Sky and Dave Brailsford. The net takeout was that the government are asking for Dave Brailsford to resign from his position to, you know, and I assume they're looking for someone with a better record of transparency to come in and run Team Sky. You try finding someone like that in cycling now, it's a case of all of the people that we thought, you know, were good may not have been so good. And I think, you know, you look back and at the tour that Bradley won, okay, there was a lot of contenders missing, and you know, Contador wasn't you know, in position and all of that stuff. But you know, Nibali's had whispers about him in the past, and the way that Wiggins and Froome just rode away from him, you know, at the time we were all carried away, we were euphoric, we were jumping up and down, this was fantastic. You know, maybe we've been taken for mugs, maybe. But there has been quite a lot of exciting racing. We had, just after we broadcast last week on Wednesday, we had Le Samin, which last year I think was probably the best classic of the season. This year, not quite as good. A couple of reasons for that. The weather was cold, as it has been all week, but there wasn't the driving rain and sleet and stuff that made the cobble so treacherous last year, and the strong wind. It was okay as a race goes. I think the second challenge was Quickstep. After a blank weekend at Nieuwsblad and Kerner, they've got their A team out, all testing their Paris-Roubaix bikes. Philippe Gilbert had one or two problems with his Paris-Roubaix bike and he had to switch. But he and Nicky Terpstra were away with perennial classics man Damien Godin, of Europe Car, I nearly said there, didn't I? Direct Energy. And he was like the meat in the Quickstep sandwich. And towards the end, Terpstra was the first one to chance his arm. Godin had worked really hard and he couldn't quite close the gap. Or whether he was trying not necessarily to close the gap so rapidly as to then let Gilbert jump or whatever, you know. But they couldn't get across. Terpstra won solo. And Gilbert came across the line in second. It was a really good finale. It's a great little course, that. That finishing loop is brilliant. And of course, then the eyes of the peloton moved to Italy, and whilst the beast from the east was savaging most of our part of the world, and boy was it, interestingly, Italy had seemed to have their snow and they'd had their thaw, which meant that the Strada Bianchi, the gravelly, chalky, clayey, dusty roads were not dusty roads as in the former wrestler, just wanted to clarify that, they were proper claggy, I think was what the commentator said, and wet. And what a race this was. After last week at Nieuwsblad, I think everyone was keen to see how the world cyclocross champion Wout van Aert went. He was the rider of the race by some considerable margin. He was driving the breakaway for a time before. I think he got fed up of driving the breakaway and not getting anything out of it, so he broke away. Roman Bardet of Azur d'Azur was with him. They formed a brilliant partnership. It looked for quite some time that they might have done enough to get themselves home, but in the counter-attack behind, we had Peter Seri of Quickstep, probably not the man Quickstep would have wanted in the breakaway, but he was their chosen one, so to speak. And he was dropped by Tejs Benoot of Lotto, who was with him. And then Benoot rode across the gap in some style before getting to the final 20% gravel sector, where he dispatched both Bardet and Van Aert, who was starting to struggle by now. And he managed to hold on into Siena for the finish. Bardet came through in second. TV pictures broke up and you saw him just come through in second. Apparently Van Aert was that tired. He'd had some trouble on the final run to the finish, the last few hundred metres. He clung on for third after Valverde and the other group started charging to try and close him down. What a ride that was. But Tejs Benoot finally has arrived. Top five finish in his first Flanders as I think he was just about still a teenager. Now he's managed to deliver a classic win. And it's a monument in all but name, name now, Strada Bianchi. And it was brilliant. What a ride. And he did it in some style and in some panache. The photos of this event will, you know, they'll be resonating for years. It's just a shame that kind of like, you know, as we've already discussed, the Monday after that excellent race will now be will now be dominated by off-the-bike issues rather than on-the-bike issues. But hey, Benoot did well, he rode well, he's a good rider, and it bodes well for Lotto, who had looked pretty out of sorts for the whole season, now suddenly look like they could be contenders in the classics. And you know, you really hope that that's the case, because that would be fantastic for them. So even if that wasn't enough for you, we had the start of Paris-Nice, the race to the sun yesterday. Not too much sun in the Parisian suburbs, and of course Parisian suburbs, rain, cold. There was plenty of crashes. There was one quite near the finish on a bit of white line and a zebra crossing that took down quite a few and meant there was a split. Of the GC guys, Julian Alaphilippe was the winner. He was on the right side of the split, even sprinting for the line, and there's 2 seconds already on the rest of the GC contenders. The big loser in GC terms was TJ Van Garderen, who fell twice and is including into a team car and is now out of the race. There's some great stages coming up in Paris-Nice as the week goes on. We've got one to the scenic Citadel of Sisteron, which I'm really looking forward to. So yeah, try and catch that on Eurosport. And then concurrently, we've got Tirreno Adriatico with Chris Froome allegedly starting midweek. So we'll be back next week with more on those events. Just for consistency's sake, Arnaud Démare won the first stage of Paris-Nice and will take the jersey into today's stage. Thank you very much for listening, guys. We will be back same time next week.